So when it comes to doing that thing that you've been wanting to work on, starting that new area that maybe people hadn't seen you do before, instead of being held back by the question, what if it doesn't work out? Ask yourself this instead. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode. I'm very excited to have you guys back with me. And this week we're going to be really kind of delving into something that I think really plagues a lot of people, especially when we come towards the end of the year and we're thinking about what we want to do next year, the goals that we have, everything that we're looking to achieve. And it's this phrase, this question that we sometimes tend to ask ourselves, which is like, what if it doesn't work? What if it doesn't work? It's the subconscious and sometimes conscious, like niggling thought that this thing that we want to try, this next phase of life that we're trying to figure out, may be so risky that it's not actually worth trying, because if it doesn't work out, everything will kind of come crashing down. And on one hand, it might seem really practical. It might seem like it's worth saying to ourselves, well, if it doesn't work, because it may not work, I'm not going to bother. The other risk that you expose yourself to is kind of a life less than what you would want and what you expected. And I always say that it's a really curious thing to feel a tinge of regret or what if I had tried after the fact. So today we're going to kind of explore what happens if it doesn't work and why that question isn't the question you should be asking yourself when you delve into a new endeavor. You should instead be focusing on asking a couple of other questions that we're going to get into. So this is really all about hedging. It's all about the art of problem solving. And just stick with me and I'm going to explain it all in a lot of detail. So I saw a tweet a while ago that said A16Z and Sequoia are wrong 90% of the time. And for the tech people in the room, you probably know who A16Z and Sequoia are. They are both major, major venture capital businesses that have been behind kind of the household names, the Facebooks, the Airbnbs, the Skypes, the major tech companies that people look at as a prime example of true tech success. They are some of the companies that have invested in these businesses at the very early stages before they were as big and as powerful as they were. They invested in them. And the idea is that, you know, for founders and in the tech world, that if you are backed by A16Z, which actually stands for Andreessen Horowitz, which is the name of some of the founders, if you're backed by these kind of venture capital businesses, then because they are the home of the Facebooks and the all the other different businesses, it's likely that you have been bet on in by the greats, and therefore your business is likely to be very successful. So basically, long story short, being able to say that I raise money from here and here and here places is kind of like a stamp of approval. They're kind of like the Ivy League, the Oxbridge of venture capital firms, especially in the tech world. So I'm building them up and painting you this picture because I want you to see how important and revered they are in society and in the tech sphere, right? But going back to the tweet says that they're wrong 90% of the time, and he adds like a dramatic dot, dot, dot for effect. And now I don't know that the actual number, 90%, is 100% correct, but the sentiment definitely is. And the sentiment is basically that these, the greats, the Ivy Leagues, the most revered and respected businesses, the smartest businesses, the people that hire only the smartest people, they make the best decisions, they invest in all the startup unicorns. The idea is that basically that these great companies that are known for taking bets that pay off, they're actually wrong 90% of the time. And I love that sentiment. And it's something that can be applied, yes, in business, yes, in tech, which is where it starts. But as you know, one of the things that's important to me is to always look at where in your life or where in the world can you take reference from, even if they're not in your industry. I actually think it's better if they're not in your industry, because then you actually have the opportunity to get some inspiration that maybe your contemporaries and your competitors don't have. I just think it makes you a more well-rounded person and have like a more well-rounded experience of life. So why does this guy say that they're wrong 90% of the time? And what has that got to do with anything that we talk about on this podcast? What has that got to do with what if something goes wrong? It has everything to do, because basically when I saw that tweet, it made me think about the model that venture capital businesses and a lot of investment businesses in general are built on, which is this idea that an X proportion, let's use 10% for now, but that may not be the exact number, that they build their business on the fact that, let's say we're going to make a bet or we're going to invest in 100 companies. But from our data and from history, we only know that 10% of companies actually really pay off. we're going to invest in 100 that we really think will, but we know that actually we're wrong 90% of the time. We know that things only pay off 10% of the time. So by investing in these hundreds, at least 10 of them are going to work to the point where our investment in all these other ones is actually covered and probably repaid back. And that's what Mr. Refi, the guy who made the tweet, is saying when he says that they're wrong, quote unquote, 90% of the time. It's that these businesses, as much as we hear the Facebooks, the Airbnbs, the big companies that we all know and that are household names today, it's only a small snapshot of the entire investment portfolio. It's only a small snapshot of how much effort it takes and how many bets, I'm going to call them bets, but how many investments, how many risks, how many chances have to be made and have to be taken in order to actually have a payoff. And this is because the truth is, like, no matter how intelligent, no matter how diligent, no matter how hardworking you are or an organization is, none of us can be 100% right 100% of the time. It's just the truth about life. And that is the crux of why this particular quote triggered this series of thoughts in my mind, because I thought, actually, yes, this is a business tweet, it's like a tech tweet, but it actually applies to our approach to the risks that we take in life. It highlights the fact that we shouldn't ever really be asking or be limited by the question. We should definitely ask in an assessing risk, like, what happens if it doesn't work, but we shouldn't be allowing that phrase, what happens if it doesn't work, to stop us from actually taking action. We should be asking better questions than that, and I will explain and get into what I think some of those questions actually are. But before we continue, I want you to look at your own life. I want you to reflect and ask yourself, where am I maybe holding back because I'm worried about what will happen if it goes wrong? Even as I'm saying this, I'm thinking, okay, there's certain areas in my life, like certain things that I'm like, yeah, I'm saying I'm not doing that because it's a smart decision, but actually it's driven by a risk of fear and things like going completely wrong. And I guess the whole kind of principle is that, as I've said before, we're not right 100% of the time. We can't even predict what's going to happen in our lives. Like, how many things have happened in your life that you just couldn't even predict? Good and maybe a little bit challenging as well. So instead of letting that be the limiting factor, let's think without limits for a moment. Write down those things that are that you would love to do, but for whatever reason you feel like it's not the right time. That's something we give ourselves, that we say to ourselves a lot, and suddenly 5, 10, 15, 20 years have passed, suddenly a whole lifetime has passed, and it's like, so when is it going to be the right time? Nothing is ever perfect. No scenario ever says everything in your life is going to be in perfect balance so that you can try this new thing. That's never going to be the case. It's all about being able to watch really carefully, be aware of the resources and the dynamics you have at your disposal, and then just going for it, right? But don't mind me. I'm gonna explain how, and I'm going to help you to open your mind and build the confidence to really take that step. So one of the examples I wanted to give was also penicillin, because that is also in the field of science and nature, which I thought was super interesting, because in the field of science, the whole point of scientific labs is to constantly experiment. The whole thing is to experiment and see what outcomes you get, and then take the best outcomes of those and put them into a medicine or into a cure or into a certain medical practice that can improve our lives, right? That's the whole point. And in a similar way, the discovery of penicillin, which is like a cornerstone in antibiotics and a cornerstone in actually our modern medical system, is that was found as an overgrowth of mold from another experiment. And Fleming, who discovered it, found that this particular overgrowth that was happening in one of his experiments was also bacteria-free. So it had antibiotic properties, and that became, like I said, the cornerstone of medicine, right? So in that instance, if this other project that he had been running hadn't completely grown mold and, you know, been outdated, etc., we wouldn't actually have the solution to modern medicine. And I think, like I said, science is a really interesting example of that, because embedded in the practice is the series of tests. And instead of seeing our lives as one shot only, when you see your life as a series of tests and experiments, you know that nothing can ever go so wrong that it's irreversible, or that nothing can ever go so wrong that it's completely wasted. Things may go wrong or not how you expected, but you have learnings, and you may also have discoveries that you never anticipated would come out at the other end. And I think that's really exciting. So when it comes to doing that thing that you've been wanting to work on, starting that new area that maybe people hadn't seen you do before, instead of being held back by the question, what if it doesn't work out, ask yourself this instead. Ask yourself, how am I hedging for the potential challenges that may come along? That is a more helpful way to, one, take action, and two, actually start to manage and insulate yourself against the potential risks. This episode is not about saying, like, throw all caution to the wind and take risks and it's all going to be fine. No, it may not be. There may be challenges, but as we always have learned, many of us have learned in school, this whole concept of like evolution and survival of the fittest, even though we may not be like foraging in the woods right now, trying to survive for things to eat, especially in the kind of modern cities and like Western world, we are definitely in a survival of the fittest when it comes to evolution, when it comes to being able to evolve to new ways of thinking, when it comes to being able to evolve to new practices that may be happening in your industry, to new technology. We still have to have this approach, this flexibility, this ability to prepare and figure out and respond to and navigate difficulties, changes and challenges, rather than standing on the sidelines and being like, it's not going to work out, it's too scary, I'm just going to do nothing. Because if you do nothing, like I said, survival of the fittest, doing nothing is kind of the surest way to kind of take yourself completely out of the game. So what does planning and preparing for the challenges of life look like, right? I think there's two core factors, two core steps in this order that can really help you. So the first one is to be able to build up the mental resilience to withstand the changes that may happen in life. And the second one is being able to hedge. So first one being, how do you build up mental resilience, right? You feel, I personally believe, like I said in previous episodes, I said in episode 11, it all starts with the mind. And then when the mind is aligned, our actions completely start to play out. So how you build up that mental resilience is you grow your intellect, you grow your thinking around how to respond to change, right? So you can listen to podcasts like this. You can listen to podcasts and read books. You can make sure that you're in conversations with people that challenge you, because you'll start to expand your field of vision and you'll start to understand that actually maybe this isn't the biggest thing in the world, not in a bad way, but maybe this one chance I'm taking isn't going to be do or die, it's the end of things. I think sometimes when we are moving into new seasons or new territories of life, it looks so big that it feels very like this is the only shot. If it goes wrong, my whole life is over. And that can be intimidating. That can make you freeze. But the minute you have surrounded yourself with people, with resources, with information that kind of give you a broader scope of vision, you realize like, this is one hill in a series of hills in my life. This isn't the only moment that I'm going to get. And once that issue or that goal or that aspiration seems smaller, it feels more achievable. When it feels more achievable, we're more likely to take action. And this is all about action, right? I as a person, have a very big bias for action. I'm like, we can talk for 100 years, but the only people who, to me, who win in this game are the people that can actually do something about it and take a step. That's where I think the biggest impact is, because that's where you learn. That's where you get the real information. You're no longer living like theoretically, you're actually able to make progress, right? Someone can talk about, let's take this podcast for example, someone can talk about having a podcast for 3 years, there's no podcast, it's just a conversation, and someone else could maybe not even have the same skills and do it within the next 3 weeks and be consistent with it, and they'll have a bigger impact in terms of their podcast existing in the world because they've actually done it. So I'm very much like, I, as much as I am driven by like excellence, and I am like a, I would say a former perfectionist, because I've been so embedded in like the startup mentality around testing, around MVPs, around this having a bias for action, I'm like, done is better than perfect. Someone actually said that to me the other day. Well, not the other day, like a few years ago. Two things. In my first job, someone said to me that phrase, done is better than perfect. Like, you're sitting here trying to figure it out by yourself and make it the best thing, and we've moved on. We would have valued having someone be able to deliver something that we could see and improve on. That's how our business moves forward. But you sat on this for like a week, let's say we've lost a week of work, and now we're giving you feedback. Whereas someone would have done the best job that they could do in 2 days and we could have moved forward. Done is better than perfect. And the other thing that someone said to me a few years ago was like, she just said it in passing and it really stuck with me. She was like, it doesn't have to be a work of art. And that really hit me, because I liked past tense to kind of ruminate on things and improve them and do all these steps and kind of like switch things up. And it was like knowing the time, knowing the moment to ruminate, to have conversations, to think, to analyze, to measure your risk, and knowing when to get it done, and knowing which things actually should be a work of art, because some stuff needs to be done exquisitely, and we can see, like, when quality comes out, we can see how it looks. But most things actually don't. Most things need to be created and done well, but they don't have to be, like, that final, like, finished thing. Anyway, this is now a bit of a, like, segue, like, through. But the second thing that I would say, the second way to prepare yourself for the challenges that will inevitably, by the way, as I've said before, like, it's inevitable. The best way to prepare yourself for the inevitable challenges and changes that may come with taking that big leap that you've been wanting to take is to hedge. It's just that simple. And that's what these big venture capital firms have done. This is why I started with them, because by them choosing to invest in, let's say, 100 businesses, knowing only 10 of them are really going to pay off, they've hedged their risks by spreading it out across 100. Instead of saying, okay, well, 10 of our businesses are going to be successful, so we'll only invest in 10, they've said, actually, we're going to invest in 100, and it should balance out. Hedging is defined as to protect oneself against loss on a, open brackets, on a bet or investment, by making balancing and compensating transactions. So that's basically what I've just described with the venture capital businesses. And I guess the question to you, and I hope this is starting to become clear, is that I'll give you some examples. Like, how would you hedge the risk that comes with choosing to do another degree versus staying in a high paying job or a stable job? There might be things that you want to do when you do that. So you say, I want to go and invest in a degree, but I'm going to make sure the degree is in a major city where I can work part time and do the same thing. Or I might choose to do it online, or I might choose to do it part time. And even though it will take longer to complete, I'm going to balance it out. But you're trying to think about how can you hedge against the two. Obviously, an obvious one is also like saving towards it so that you can take that full year out. Another question, how are you hedging the risk that expanding your family could require even more self-sacrifice from you, right? We know that the joy of a family may be something that inspires you and something that you want to do, but you might be afraid of the self-sacrifice that may come with it. What are you doing to strike the balance? Or are you just frozen being like, I don't know what to do? Or are you talking to former parents? Are you getting tips and reflecting on their experiences and thinking, okay, this is what I would actually be willing to give up? As much as I love to prioritize myself actually in this moment, this is how I'm going to do it. This is how I'm going to enlist help. This is how I'm going to plan. This is how I'm going to get my employer, my family on board, whoever needs to be on board to kind of help make that transition. I wouldn't even say easier, but I'd say a bit more of a like insulated padded journey. Of course, for me, everything is always, I can't help it. It's not, I'm not even trying. It's just that I see the Bible as like super practical, and there's always, no matter what we talk about, there's always a cross-reference somewhere. And actually, like, this is a side note for this episode, but I will say, like, if we do a little competition and you give me a topic to discuss, I'm sure there's a way that I can like connect it to the Bible, and it won't even be contrived. It will just be like, oh yeah, but this reminds me of this moment where this happened. And a good example of this is Ecclesiastes 11. It literally says, invest in many ventures because you don't know which disasters may come. So this idea of trying to avoid disaster completely and try and make decisions where we don't feel any pain, I understand why we want to do that, right? Who wants to feel pain? Literally no one. But at the same time, it's inevitable. So the sooner we can kind of be honest with ourselves and accept that reality, the better. And the more resilient we'll be. And resilience is kind of the thing that keeps people engaged and lasting and successful for the long haul rather than anything else. And I think I want to give a couple of other like translations of it, because I typically tend to look in this way, and I would recommend it for you too. If you read the Bible a lot, if you don't, if you're curious about it, is have a look at different translations, because they give you a different flavor of what's being said. And also, if you have time and if you have the opportunity, I would also look at the original Greek or the original Hebrew if you can. I will link in the show notes Blue Letter Bible, which is like a resource where you can literally go to the original Hebrew word. So that happens to me a lot. Like if there's a phrase or a story and I'm thinking, this feels like weird, like did this really happen in the Bible? I will just quickly go and I will cross-reference to help me understand it more. But yeah, so the NIV, the New International Version, says, invest in 7 ventures. Yes, 8. You don't know what disaster may come upon the land. And the NLT, the New Living Translation, says, but divide your investments among many places, for you don't know which risks lie ahead. again, this could literally be on the wall of like A16Z or Sequoia Capital, literally being like, invest in many. Some of them may work and some of them may not. It's literally an ancient principle. So it's kind of tried and tested. And I think this is the attitude that we should have to risk taking and to doing something new rather than trying to just be paralyzed and avoidant at going for it. For me, it's when you recognize that challenges and problem solving are actually part of the journey, you're less allergic to the prospect of things going wrong. You kind of accept that, okay, there's going to be some bumps on the road, but I've done the work. I've built up the internal resilience. I've also been able to hedge in advance against the risk that at least I'm aware of. And actually, I've got enough tools, as many tools as I can possibly have without seeing the future. I've got the tools to be able to navigate and withstand what may come and what may lie ahead. And like most of the time, you'll be more evolved and stronger and more resilient and more educated on the other side of it, ready to face and embrace whatever comes next. And I think when those problems come, no, I said when, then you're like, okay, how do I figure this out? And I feel like that has been my entire 2023, if I'm really honest. I feel like I've been problem solving back to back to back to back. It's been like a rally of problem solving. And as I sat back and like reflected about how far I'd come, I just thought, let me actually look at some of this stuff through a bit more of a spiritual lens. You know, I thought about the gravity of the journey I'm on, the way that certain things in my life had come together, and they weren't coincidences, and they definitely weren't based on how experienced or how connected or how much work I'd put in. I'd definitely done those things, but I knew that even certain moments where certain things like come together and click so beautifully, you're like, this isn't just because of me. And when that came to solving the problems in my life, I realized that actually, if God has helped me start this, then God is going to help me figure this out. And that was really freeing for me, because it made me realize that I don't have to shoulder the responsibility of problem solving alone. I actually have someone who can help me, who actually kind of knows all the answers. And I remember, I think on my like 29th or 30th birthday, I think on my 29th, I got this verse, and it was Jeremiah 33:3. And it says, it literally says, it's God speaking to his children. And God says, call to me and I'll answer you. I'll show you great unsearchable things that you do not know. And in the context of solving problems, that was really profound to me, because I was like, I could go and talk to as many experts. I could try and figure stuff out, but actually God has all the answers. And some of the stuff is unsearchable. Some of the stuff I do not know. And all God says is like, call to me and I'll answer. So part of my like problem solving, always, I always try to build the habit of starting with God. And I remember I wrote in my journal earlier in this year, like, all my best ideas are yours, make my whole life your upper room. And that came from a song called Upper Room that I didn't even think I listened to like that, but suddenly it was like in my brain. And this is what I love about what I said about digesting resources that can help you, because even if you haven't sat down and been like, I'm going to memorize this, because you're digesting it, it's somewhere in the deep recesses of your brain, of your soul, of your heart. And when you need it, it will come to the surface. Like the Bible says, you know, let the Holy Spirit bring all things to remembrance, like at the right time. And I think that's definitely something I found, not just in my life, but I've also seen that with my friends as well. I think that was really comforting. And it's like a really comforting way to kind of wrap up, because I think, you know, when you think about taking a jump, taking a risk, starting a new like scenario, you can build all the resilience you want. You can hedge, you can fill yourself with all the information. But I think that when you start with God's help, and when he gives you the power of your intellect to digest all that information, to speak to people, to hedge, you can actually figure out even the most challenging and like my back's against the wall kind of situations. You just have to ask for it. That's all you have to do. All you have to do is ask and call to God, and those things will actually be revealed. So it's like, what are you waiting for? What are we waiting for? Why are we still hesitating? Why are we still worried? Take the risk, take the jump, take the transition, make the transition, especially if it's been on your mind. If it's been on your mind for like all year, this is your sign. This is your sign to take the next step of action, because you will surely be able to work it out. I'm not going to say it's easy. I'm not guaranteeing that it's going to be like smooth sailing. I'm not saying you're not going to learn. I'm not saying you're not going to find moments of improvement, but it's going to be worth it, because that has been in your heart, in your soul for a while. It's been marinating there probably for even longer. I know there's definitely some people listening to this who can think of something that started like 3 years ago and they're like, I'm being dragged by this podcast episode, and you absolutely are. I want you to let me know what that thing is, actually. And let's look into December. Let's look into 2024 at getting you into the ring, taking some action and making some progress. So thank you for listening, guys. It's been great as always. All the usual things. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube. Lol, I can't believe we have a YouTube channel. We are really building this up bit by bit from scratch. The social media handles, Take What You Need Podcast, they don't exist without you. I really need you guys there. And let me know your feedback. Comment on stuff. Drop me a message on DM, even though my DMs are horrible. But drop me a message anyway. I'll get to it at some point. Tell me what you want to talk about. If you've got questions, if you've got dilemmas, everything. Just let's discuss. There's going to be so much more. I'm so excited. And thank you for listening as always.